When you need expert help and advice on issues affecting your business, NFU Cymru, we're here for you.
Want to get to know the people who produce the food that you eat? This is the place. Step this way and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming. Hey everybody, and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming episode 48. I'm your host, Will Evans, and tonight I am heading over to Arla near Cork in the south of Ireland to talk to dairy farmers Peter and Paula Hines. How are you both?
Will, how are you keeping?
Hi Will.
Hi guys. Hi guys. Now, like I said in my tweet this morning, this is my first Rock and Roll Farming threesome, but you're never too old for new experiences, I say.
No, God, no, no. Broaden your horizons.
So you were telling me you're right in the middle of calving now on the farm, so it's quite a hectic time for you.
Yeah, hectic time of the year now. We've calved 100 in the last 3 weeks, and quiet now with the last couple of days. We had only a couple of cows calving each day, but I think this week will be busy. And Paula damaged her a ligament in her knee as well, so she was out of action for a week, which kind of put a lot of pressure on the system.
Right, okay. You're on the mend now though, Paula.
I threw away the crutches, got fed up with sitting down with the leg up. I'm not one to sit around, especially when there's work to be done, so lashed on the painkillers, threw away the crutches and strapped it up and hobbling around the yard, but you will get there. Improving every day.
Good. And how many more have you got left to calve?
Another 80 left. I'd say we'd probably calve 30 of those this week.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So you're near Cork then. Can you tell us a bit about that part of Ireland? Is it predominantly dairy farms down there?
Yeah, predominantly dairy farms around here. Good bit of tillage land in the area too, but I suppose the dairy farmers are kind of slowly but surely trying to grab a hold of some of that. We'd be about 20 minutes west of Cork City, 10 minutes west of a town called Ballincollig. Okay. And we're on a limestone vein of land. It's a nice part of the country.
Okay. Well, Paula, you're from that part of the world originally, is that right?
Yeah, I'm born and bred. Pete is the blow-in.
Yeah, because Peter, you grew up in Limerick, is that right?
Yeah, I grew up in Limerick, and I moved to Cork when I was 17.
He's here 25 years now, so he's nearly a Corkonian.
He just about qualifies on residency now, does he?
Yeah, getting there another 12 months now, I'd say, and we'll nearly get the Cork hat.
So neither of you are from a farming background, which people might be surprised to realise. I mean, I didn't realise that.
Yeah, I suppose I always had an interest in farming and animals, and I suppose when we grew up, we didn't have any land, and when I suppose my parents separated years ago, my mother remarried down in Cork, and that's why I moved down to Cork. And I suppose 2 years after I moved down then, I met Paula, and I had a horse at the time, and Paula had a few horses, and I suppose one thing led to another, and we linked up. You know how the horse people tend to stick together.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, okay. So, how did that come about, though? You both had horses. Was it just a case of being at the right place at the right time, or...?
He's lying. He spotted me walking home from school one day with my short skirt, and he said,
"Well, now to be fair, she has a great fair legs, like."
So. It's right on the doorstep of where I was born and bred, so we started hanging out the way you would.
Yeah.
And of course, I had ponies for a couple of years, mad into them. I was very, very lucky, Dad. I asked for a pony when I was 10, and within 12 months I had 15 of them.
Oh, jeez.
So we got into it in a big way. My father's business was haulage, but he built me stables and the whole lot, and got mad into the horses, did a lot of eventing, show jumping, showed a lot of Welsh ponies.
Yeah, okay.
Loved my Welsh ponies. We myself and Pete actually travelled to Swansea show 1 year. It twinned with Cork show.
Yeah.
We got picked to go over, so okay. Yeah, we did the horses for a couple of years. I only got into the farming about 4.5 years ago. We had our third daughter, Georgina, and it just wasn't going to pay me to go back to work with childcare and everything, so I started helping Pete with the calves.
Yeah.
And sure, when the time came, then the calves went out to the field and I was kind of bored. As I said earlier, I don't do well sitting around idle.
Yeah.
And I used to go into the milking parlour to have a cup of coffee with Pete when he came home farming. And there was one cow that used to always come up to the back door to me when I was standing at the back door. Val, I call her, 1915.
Yeah.
And she used to always come over and have a chat to me and put her nose up to my shoulder and lick my face. And I kind of found myself drawn more to the milking parlour then to go in and say hello to her, because I was building up this relationship with her.
Yeah.
And every time she saw me or would hear me, she'd always make a point of coming over to me.
Yeah.
So Pete said, why don't you start throwing on a few clusters? And I looked at him as if he'd succeed. She didn't know the top or the front of the front end to the back end of a cow, not a hope.
Yeah.
But I did anyway, and sure, the rest is history. He can't keep me out of the parlour now.
Yeah.
And I did a milking course, and I got my cert in milking, and I absolutely love the milking cows. I have names on all the cows, and they all come up to me, and they're all very much part of the family now.
Yeah, okay. So do you still do anything with horses, or is that it's just cows now?
All the kids have ponies.
Okay.
And this time of the year, we don't really have time to be riding out.
Yeah.
Have ponies. And, of course, I still have my few old-age pensioners that we would have had years ago.
Yeah.
Roger is a little Welsh Section A. He's 23 now. He's been with me with 22 years.
Wow.
So there's, and then there's Rosie as well, a Purpur Arab mare. Was she in Swansea? I can't remember.
Sure,
she's 28 now.
Wow, okay.
He's here with 24 years, 23.
Yeah.
So yeah, okay. There's still a few of the old age pensioners there.
Yeah, okay. So they've been around just about as long as you guys have been together, because you've been together about 23 years, is that right?
Yeah, we're together 24 years, married 16 years. And yeah. I always say Roger's the other man in my life.
Yeah. Okay. And you said you got three little girls.
Three girls. Chloe, 14. Becky is 10. And the boss, Georgina, is 4.
Yeah, we've got a rugby sevens team of little girls between us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and Georgie, I mean, yeah, speaking of Georgie, then I've seen that video. She's the Volac Young Farmer mascot. I've seen the video you've got on your Twitter profile. She is a cutie, isn't she?
Gas woman. She was delighted to be asked to be the Young Farmer mascot. She lives and breeds the farming. She loves it. She showed a Jersey calf as well last show season.
Yeah.
We had a little tiny Jersey calf. She was very small. And sure, her sisters were showing the calf, and sure, she had to show something. But it worked out.
Yeah.
It worked out perfect, because the calf and herself were the ideal height for each other.
Yeah.
And they had a ball, absolute ball. The three Jersey calves were like, they'd nearly talked, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's just, you know, great for her confidence that she was asked to be the Young Farmer's mascot for Volac, and it's something that we'd be very proud of, and she's proud of. And I think, you know, hopefully it might open up a few more doors for her in the future if she continues her love of agriculture.
Yeah, okay. So do you think you have got any future farmers there?
Definitely two.
We do. Becky, the 10-year-old, is like a miniature me. She's like a boss.
Yeah.
She tries to do, I'm very anal when it comes to calves and brushing floors and washing buckets and bedding down and cleaning out. And
yeah.
Becky does exactly the same as I do it. Like, a friend of mine went down to help the other evening with doing cubicles because I was laid up, and he came up to me and he goes, oh my God, he said, Becky's worse than you. He said, she's doing things wrong.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome, though.
Yeah, and I think it's part of the reason we decided that we'd expand as much as we could, because with two of them interested, you'd like to leave something, have something for the two of them to give the opportunity, and they can go away and get a good education And if they want to return home farming, then the farm is big enough for the two of them to go into a partnership or something.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. And so now, one of the main reasons that that we set up this interview piece was you have been very open about your past issues with mental health. Can you tell us a bit about that, please?
Yeah, I suppose 16, 17 years ago now, I struggled with my mental health, and I went into depression for a while, and I suppose at the time it got to the stage where, you know, I had zero control on my feelings, and I suppose, you know, you go around and you literally break down crying for nothing, can't sleep, don't eat great. I was working crazy hours at the time for a company, and that probably had a big knock-on effect on it, and probably didn't have a great social life because I was working such big long hours.
Yeah. We were about horses as well at the time, so like he was working over 100 hours a week, and then we'd lash into horses at the weekend and go up and down the country to show, so that didn't help the situation either.
Yeah.
It got to the stage where I felt so down, so depressed, interest in nothing, and I went to the doctor because I knew I had to do something, to be fair, and he gave me a number of a very good counsellor, and, you know, I suppose when mental health gets you, it can frighten the crap out of you fairly quickly. There was nights there where I would literally, no matter what time I got to bed, I'd sleep for 2 hours, and I would wake, and I would just, couldn't get me back to sleep. And I would have had a couple of panic attacks over the years. And when you have a serious panic attack, it really does scare the crap out of you, because I suppose, you know, you don't really, it pretty much feels like you're having a heart attack.
Yeah.
And trying to wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and your heart is just pounding out of your chest and feels like it's going to explode for no reason. There was one week I had two of them, you know, within a couple of nights, and you know, woke up, wasn't thinking about anything, but literally, it's fairly serious. And I suppose I was lucky in that I realised I had to do something about it and spoke to my doctor, and we have a very, very good GP, knows us very well. And he put me in touch with a fantastic counsellor. And this was the first time I went to see her. It was hugely daunting. You go in and you chat for an hour, and they get to figure out your head and in some ways make you feel like, you know, you're not. How would you say, you've probably more control over your feelings and your thoughts than you would realize yourself.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it gives you relief, and you kind of come outside after a good counseling session like that, and everything's normal for maybe half an hour, and you know, you probably start to go downhill a bit again, and but you realize, yeah, look, it had a major positive effect, and it's the thing that drives you to go back again. And I know I really genuinely looked forward to going back to see Mary as fast as I could. And we chatted about everything, and I know Paula came with me a few times, and I suppose slowly but surely we started to space out the visits to her, and yeah, it got me through it. And I suppose the one thing I'd always be kind of to some extent adamant about is that, you know, when you've suffered with your mental health, it's, you know, there's no cure. You kind of learn to manage yourself better. And yeah, I'd have tough times over the years, but I've learned how to deal with it, and I do a lot more open with Paula, and I try and look after myself a bit better. I suppose people wouldn't think it now to see me on social media or something, or at events, but I probably lack confidence in myself. and I'd probably doubt myself a bit too much.
Yeah.
But I think you kind of learn to manage that side of it too. And that's, you know, when you're really doubting yourself, you try and find something to give you a hugely positive thought, which will, I suppose, try and pick you back up again. And I also try and have a good old laugh every day. And
yeah.
I would think I'd be a fair bit of a blackguard, but look, if you can't get up in the morning and have a good laugh,
yeah.
Did you see the catwalk on Wednesday?
I certainly did.
Yeah, I'm after losing my Cindy Crawford and making parlour crumbs with that. Wasn't it? I'll ask Stephen about that.
I think it was just, you know, it was something that I'd never spoken to anybody about for years. And just by chance last year when we were holding a farm open day for charity, one of the charities we picked, and we picked two. One was Breast Cancer Ireland, because I think it's something, my view on that charity is breast cancer, the biggest cure is awareness.
Yeah.
And the more money that they have, the more awareness they can create. We picked Aware, which is a mental health awareness charity, and there was one night on social media I was explaining why we picked Breast Cancer Ireland, and I said something briefly about why we picked Aware, and I got a DM at 12 o'clock that night from a chap up the country that was having a really, really tough time, and it had opened his eyes because he understood where I was coming from.
Yeah.
And I chatted to him on and off on DM, gave him a bit of advice on, you know, going and having a chat with someone and making himself a priority. And, you know, I wouldn't discuss his details now, but I suppose I just gave him a few pointers on how to straighten out the daily side of things and then go and find someone very good to talk to. And to be fair, I've spoken to him a few times since now, and he really turned himself around. And it was an eye opener that, just by sharing a small bit of what I went through, you know, it was helping somebody else. And I know we didn't really discuss it after that, then until the open day. And I said something briefly at the open day. And a number of people said it to me after that, you know, it really touched home with them. And one or two farmers that were having a seriously tough time. And the following morning, a couple knocked on our front door at 9:30. And they had a young son at home farming, hadn't been out of his bedroom with a month, and they had tried every angle. He'd been to hospital, doctors, A&E departments, and nothing was working. And they had been at our open day the previous day, and they just wanted to sit down and have a cup of tea and a chat and give us a few pointers and see if we could get them a phone number for a good counsellor.
Yeah.
And we actually agreed to share my story with the paper that week anyway. And I suppose it was an interview that we got to proofread before it was ever published, because I was asked briefly, could we say a small bit in the paper about it? And I said, there's no point in saying a small bit. If you want to print it properly. So we gave them a full interview on it, and we proofread it 48 hours before it was printed. And that we told that couple about that it was being printed, and they left the paper open the following week on their kitchen table, just so that the son would read it at some stage. And to be fair, he's back out in the yard working and stuff, and because I suppose you kind of realised, you know, he's not alone.
Yeah.
And it just kind of, you know, it's some people might find it strange that a fella would be open as that about their mental health, but I kind of, it's a huge problem in the farming industry globally, and the messages that we get privately would did fairly now get to you. And not the easiest thing. People would probably think it's very easy for me to discuss it. It's not.
No.
I've done a couple of forums and stuff like that, and you actually feel really tired after it, because
I'm sure
some of the questions that you get asked, like, they stop you in your tracks.
Yeah.
I know when I did the ear to the ground interview, And it wasn't shown on telly, but they asked me one question and I literally just, I went from smiling and having a laugh to just crying because for a second, because they just, it hit home so deep with me.
Yeah.
You know, because I just, you know, it's not, I'm not sharing it for the laugh. Like it's, you know, it's the bulk of people that are having issues on farms are unfortunately are male, and we need to change that quickly. And we need fellas to realize that, look, we can't change the weather. It's, there's going to be market deviations, financial pressures, weather pressures, fodder pressures. And you have to learn to start talking to someone, have a great agri advisor, a couple of good friends, be in a discussion group, share the problems, because we all have problems, whether we like it or not. And some people, those problems are going to just affect a lot more. And I suppose, you know, if you're worried about running out of fodder and you're not sleeping about it, I mean, and I don't know whether you read the report, Will, but within 3 days of reducing the amount of sleep you have, depression set in, and that report was done in the UK in the last few months. So you know, it's not, it's the pressure, the snowball effect of losing sleep, probably not eating great, and you know, it just kicks into you, and you need to we all need to learn to manage it and just share the pressures. And we need to change the thing, because this was like, you saw the Yellow Wellies campaign there, like,
yes,
and I think it, in the media, some of the media, it was one farm a week. It's over one farm a week commits suicide in the UK. It's one every second day in France. I got a message. We got a message there Christmas time from a small community in New Zealand, and four young farmers had committed suicide in the previous 7 days. Like,
and it's, Jesus,
that's tough.
We all need to stand up, and I suppose you see some countries tackling it head on, and it's great to see the Yellow Wellies campaign and Do More Ag.
The Do More Ag campaign in Canada has been great, hasn't it, with Leslie Kelly and Kim Keller. They've done a lot of really helping people, haven't they?
Something here that's going to be launched hopefully within the next week.
Yeah.
And we'd hope that, you know, that's because it's a very positive campaign that we're getting involved in, and something we'd be hugely proud of, and be just nice to change it and open up the discussion a bit more.
Yeah. Has knowing that you've helped others, has that helped you to come to terms with it yourself, do you think?
It's the only reason I share it, being honest with you.
Yeah.
Some days I really don't feel like talking about it.
Yeah.
And then you get a message from someone who meet someone and you know it's helped them, and you're kind of, yeah. Yeah, that's, I know when I did the forum up at the ploughing, I found that tough now, because you're a public audience and it's like, and it's, I suppose you're looking out into a crowd and you know, if you, when you doubt yourself as a mob, you're kind of wondering, God, what are they thinking of what I'm saying here? Like, and
yeah,
you know, we met a fella the following morning, and he's probably the same age as myself, and he literally broke down in tears in front of us, and you're kind of, that hits home, that just, you know, by just chat to this fella, you might, you'd hope that you'd try and help him some bit. And
Paula, it must have been really, really tough for you as well, seeing Pete struggling.
Yeah, because I suppose, you know, we were going out at that stage, we were both very young.
Yeah.
But I suppose I'm a bit of a tough nut sometimes. A lot of times I can wear my heart in my sleeves, but the biggest thing was to get him to talk to me, because, you know, the way they say, women say, oh, is there something, do you know, oh yeah, we're fine.
Yeah.
Men can do that as well.
Yeah.
So just like breaking down that barrier and getting him to talk, I suppose, was the biggest challenge. But he did eventually, and it was only me, Pete, and the doctor and our counsellor knew what was going on. Nobody else knew. None of our families knew about it. But, you know, sure, we got through it. It really was love at first sight when we met. So we know each other inside out.
Yeah.
you know, we all have bad days. I'm a nightmare sometimes. Like, he feels like banging his head off a brick wall there some days. I mean, I get so odd.
Yeah, we call it. And you see the tears swishing, he does start to recover.
But it's like, no, do you know, we just, no, the same as no, we always, if there was an issue, we would just sit down, we discuss it, we try and come up with a way to deal with it and, you know, get over it and move forward.
Yeah.
Do you know, so, but it did take a while to break down the barriers to get him to open up to say, yeah, look, I'm feeling this way or that way. Now I feel a small bit of a hypocrite saying that, because if I'm having a crap day and I'm in a mood and he comes up to me and says, are you all right? And I say, yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
The chestnut mare coming out of me.
Yeah.
But I guess we're getting more mature, should we put it. We definitely find it easier to, we'd sit down, have a talk. And I suppose it's great that we're both farming together.
Mm.
We can share the pressures. Just makes things a lot easier to know, even, you know, some years there with the milk price and stuff is tough. Last year was an extremely very, very tough year for us.
Yeah.
We're expanding. We started building our new parlour, a new shed in January. Started calving in February, so things were just mental, and, you know, there was no sleep. You were going 24/7 and things were getting a bit touchy. But, you know, because we were there together and we were able to sit down and say, have a chat about things, and we'd say, right, we'll go forward this way, and we'd make out a list, and you do that, and I'll do this. You know, sharing the pressures is a big advantage.
Yeah.
And definitely being a lot more open with each other.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and you have to surround yourself with someone. Like, you can't isolate yourself. I think that's, you know, for a farmer that's having pressure, or feeling down, or, you know, struggling with their mental health, that's the number one thing, in my opinion, is surround yourself with somebody who's positive, that understands you. Because I know personally, like, it's, if I didn't have Paul around the yard, God, to be a lonely place. Like, and,
yeah,
you know, there's a couple of occasions now that she's been away for a bit, like, and it's,
I hate it.
Like, it's just, I miss the company. I miss getting up in the morning and going down to the milking parlour together. And
yes,
yeah, you mightn't chat, or you might just smile at each other or whatever, but you kind of know if you're having a crap morning that there's someone there.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I was missing for 3 weeks for the autumn, and it was tough, wasn't it?
Mm.
Even the build up to it, the 3 weeks I was missing, you know, there was a big build up to it, and,
yeah,
you know, that was tough.
Yeah.
But once I got going, there was an end goal in sight, and, you know, we got through it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, 3 weeks is a long time, isn't it? I'd find that hard.
Especially if you haven't spent any time apart.
Yeah.
I'd say the only time we really would have spent apart since we met is when I've been in the hospital giving birth to the kids.
Mm.
So the prospect of being away from each other for nearly 3 weeks was hugely daunting, as you could imagine.
You can imagine, yeah. Okay. All right. So, Petey, as we alluded to earlier, neither of you are from farming background. How did you end up at the farm?
Yeah, so I suppose it's my stepfather's farm, and in 2010, I was given the opportunity to come home and help out and do a bit of work, and I just decided that if I wanted to go farming, the first thing I had to do was try and educate myself and see what was out there at the time. And I was gone over the age for the stamp relief duty, and I was told I shouldn't go to college because it would be a waste of my time. But I did anyway. I just decided, right, it's something I wanted to do, just go down for 12 months and see what was new in the egg industry.
Yeah.
And I gave 12 months in Dara down in Clonakilty, and ended up being student of the year down there.
Because what age were you then?
Oh, I was 36. I was older than most of the...
So you were like the granddad of the class.
Oh, I was. Yeah.
He was older than some of the teachers.
That's a great thing to do. A lot of people wouldn't do that at that age. I think that's a really cool thing you've done there.
Yeah, it was kind of daunting, though, to be fair. No,
yeah,
I'll bet. School, like, you know, all that.
Yeah.
I didn't go with my Thomas the Tank lunchbox.
Yeah, but even, you know, for the future, for the girls to say, you know, it's never too late to go back and educate yourself to do something that you want to do, that
absolutely.
You love.
Yeah.
You know, if they decide to go to college and study something and they decide when they're 35 that, oh, crap, I hate this, I want to do something else. Well, it's never too late to go and do what you love.
No.
Once you have the passion and the determination, you can achieve anything in life.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so
if you'd asked me 5 years ago, would I be milking cows, I'd have laughed in your face.
So when did you, so Peter, you came home from college.
Yeah, I joined a discussion group with Chagask, and I suppose fairly quickly learned within the 12 months of being in the discussion group and going to college that the number one way to produce milk really efficiently was off grass. So I started training myself up on grass measuring as best I could. Came home, helped me out on the farm. Decided I needed 12 months to learn the farm because I suppose that's one thing, like each farm is different.
Yeah.
And have to learn your own particular farm and see what's right and what's wrong with it and before you start trying to change the world. We were milking 50 cows at the time, finishing the calves, the beef calves on a 30-month system. Wasn't really doing any reseeding and stuff like that. So this was 2012 then. I really got stuck into it. Then we'd been, when I came home, we were doing 240 days of grass, doing about 270 kilos of milk solids. Soil fertility was poor. So the following, 2012, changed straight to a grass-based system, out late January. We did 320 days of grass that year. Spent a lot of time grass measuring. Got the cows up to about 360 kilos of milk solids. There was no AI on the farm at the time. Changed to AI. We had 31-week calving spread, which for a spring calving system, you could argue whether we were hinting at the calving.
Yeah.
And I just decided, right, this is, I suppose, no offense to anyone, but everything was probably so inefficient and needed to be grabbed with both hands and challenged. And
yeah.
Put the calving pattern down to 12 weeks and didn't really have an issue with culling cows. In that, to be fair, we put our heart and soul into the breeding season. It's been watched the cows 5 times a day to ensure that we were serving them when we wanted with AI. And I got a very good AI technician from New Zealand to give us a hand, and he's a huge part of the team on the farm here. He's with us ever since. And we just went from there. And I suppose 20. Built up to 2015, then 2014, I suppose we were kind of gearing up to quotas going, and we had 32 reactors and a big TB breakdown and cut the herd of cows in half, really. And it was probably heartbreaking at the time, to be fair, because I got to know the cows so well, and we lost a lot of very, very good cows in that breakdown. And I know when the vet read them, we ran out of brass tags after 2 runs of the crush, and Paula had to go into the vets, and you're just standing there, cow after cow, going down as a reactor, and you know, I wouldn't be afraid to say it, like I literally cried most of the day, just seeing them, knowing them individually. And seeing those cows get a brass tag put in them and knowing that that was the end of the road for them, and you had a big plan built up to hit 2015 with quotas going, and did a lot of work with the Department of Agriculture to try and get rid of any underlying issues after with TB, and they were very good to us. We have a good relationship with the two department vets, and I suppose part of myself, I suppose a month later, we had to load up those cows on a Sunday evening, and you know, when you send off a double lorry full of your best cows, that was absolutely soul destroying that Sunday evening. No, I can tell you, I stood on the, I actually walked up with a big long tarmac lane, and I'd still see it now. And I walked up the lane after the lorry that evening, and just shook the hell out of us, and I suppose we were kind of lucky that it was outside the back door. I suppose that's the one thing you'd always keep in the back of your mind. But like, how is our family here?
Yeah.
a lot of people probably wouldn't believe it. Like, but when we post selfies and stuff with cows, groups that come in here and they say, God, your cows are so relaxed, but they literally, that's, they're given the respect to be that quiet, like, and so yeah, look, later that year, at the end of 2014, myself and Paul bought 14 calf heifers, and we milked 100, we calved down 100 cows in 2015. We still had, we only had the facilities for 60 cows, but I suppose there's two ways just coming off the farm, and you need to make a bit of money before you can start trying to invest. And the plan was always, I suppose the plan gets changed every year. Even the bank manager kind of looks at me now when I give him a 6-year plan, and he says, "So this is 6 years that's being changed next year." Which does happen to be. But it always gets tweaked and improved. And I suppose the goal when I was in ag college was to milk 90 cows, and we kept on 180 this year. So the 6-year plan in college got well torn up.
That's a big expansion in a very short time, isn't it? You've obviously
it's been tiring because I suppose, like, it's been chasing your tail with every little thing, reseeding. Like, we reseed
roadways
50 acres plus a year.
Yeah.
You know, we've kept every single heifer that has been brought back into the herd. So it's taken a huge amount of money. Mm-hmm. And we calved down 150 in 2017 with facilities for 70 cows. It was tough. it took guts to do it, and we pulled it off. And to be fair, like, the cows were in savage condition. They were in great condition in April, but we literally worked our holes off to do it.
We were milking over 8 hours a day with the parlour we had. Like,
Anyone who's ever milked cows knows that that is a lot of work.
It's painful. I mean, you're going to be eating at 5 o'clock to start milking the cows, knowing you're not going to come out of it till 8 or half 8. It's shocking. So, like, we split it. I used Quinn and start off the first half, and he'd go and do the other half. Like, we had no other choice. We had to get the cash flow going to, the plan was to put in a new parlour and new facilities in 2016, but the milk price was just shocking. Yeah. So we had to put it back 12 months, and that's what we had to do for the 12 months. We'll spend 8 hours a day milking, and we got there in 2017 then.
Yeah, we built new facilities. We've facilities to feed red for 240 cows. We've nearly 200 cubicles, 20-unit parlours, everything that you want in it, cluster flushing, cluster removers, baling, auto-drafting. Collars on the cows,
moon monitor.
With the moon monitors, bulk tanks connected to our phones. So it's all high tech now. Facilities are put in that, I suppose, we put in the investment that we can try and
manage,
take some bit of a step back and enjoy life at the same time, because you need the quality of life, and it wasn't sustainable the way we were going. And the other thing about the farm is we always built it as a team, so I suppose everybody involved, from our Chagask advisors, grass seed company, the bank, AI companies, detergents, everybody's a team member. If you want to be on the team, you play on the team.
Yeah.
If you're not willing to play on the team, we find someone else. And it might sound cutthroat, but we all have huge respect for us, for each other, and nobody actually drops out of the team.
Yeah.
Like, I can make, last year, like, I was able to make the 150 cows on my own if Pete was doing away, or if he was away doing something, or if he was doing other jobs, like, in under an hour and a half. I mean, that's some time saving.
Yeah. Just,
and the cows have so much more comfort. Like, they love, like, we were going to, for example, we were going to put in a backing gate for the collecting yard, but there's actually no need because they just run straight into it. They just love it. Cow flow is so much easier and everything. They,
I suppose we've got a lot of help in the industry too. To be fair, like, we're Keystone Herd with the National Cattle Breeding Centre. There's only 32 herds in the country selected. All our females are genotyped.
Yeah,
use the top bulls on the heifers the whole time, so we're using the best genetics the whole time. We're also part of the monoculture trial, which trials single variety grass seeds. We do that with Chagask, and we got a lot of help from the Grassy companies too. So it's about pushing the boundaries, and that's something that we probably try and do on the farm as best we can from year to year. I suppose like we use the elite bulls on our heifers to get the highest genetic gain, which with no calving data on those bulls would seem like lunacy. But we haven't jacked a calf this year out of a heifer, to be fair. And we put a lot of background work into selecting those bulls to use on heifers. And I think likewise with the grass seed companies, like they give us a lot of support to try and get push grass as best we can. We've reseeded a number of years here. We've started reseeding in March to try and gain time. And I suppose the book would probably tell you that reseeding in March is never going to work. We've done it twice, put a set grass seed on Paddy's Day, and we've been grazing the start of May. It's amazing, I suppose, the abuse that grass seed will take with frost, hills, snow, floods, and dry van if you just get your soil fertility right and set it right at the time. And I suppose it's just trying new things, seeing what works.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, it's just as much of a learning curve.
Yeah.
So, yes, the cows are up to 420 kilos of milk solids last year, still doing over 300 days of grass. We got out the 1st of February this year, and we're on three-hour breaks, and there's a bit of work on it. But
the weather is shocking.
It's an efficient system. We have a pedigree Holstein herd, a few pedigree jerseys. there was originally a pedigree herd on the farm going back to 1880 when there was cows taken over to London, and they actually won over there at the time. And it was one thing that I suppose we wanted to bring back to the farm, myself and Paula, that we'd be kind of passionate about the history of the place too. And we upgraded the herd to pedigree status again, and we use all pedigree bulls on the herd. Probably goes against what research would tell you, that they would probably tell you we should be crossbreeding, but we like the pedigrees. We're breeding a smaller kind of pedigree cow that suits a grass-based system, holds her condition well, high EVI cow. Facilities are there now to manage them. I suppose the thing about last year was the fact that no sooner had we finished calving and finished building, and we were nominated for Farmer of the Year by one of the grass seed companies we work with. And as luck would have it, we ended up winning it in May, and it's just been a roller coaster since.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's a very prestigious thing, that is, isn't it? It's vent up in Dublin. And I was reading about it. You won two awards there, didn't you?
Yeah, we were entered as the Rising Star, which would be kind of a new entrant to farming.
Yeah.
And I remember when the judges came down to the yard, it was the attitude was, God, this is a 42-year-old young farmer, new entrant. He was just kind of going like this. Has he been asleep for half the time? And we just decided when we were kind of shortlisted down that we would literally give them every bit of data we had. We gave them every financial detail on the farm, all our soil fertility,
our business plan,
grass varieties, business plan,
everything,
EBIs, co-op reports. We just threw everything at them and we said, you're either in it to win it or, and to be fair, we never, ever in a million years would have thought that we would have won it. And I think we kind of went to Dublin with the attitude
that... you were the final three for the Rising Star, and we said, look, if nothing else, it's a chance to get dressed up and have a night out.
Yeah, well, there's a story about your dress as well, isn't there, Paula?
Oh, Jeannie Mac, the dress.
This goes back to the team effect on the farm, now, right?
So, I hate shopping, Will. Absolutely. Pete buys all my clothes. So when the final, he was on the shortlist for the final three, and he goes, great, black tie, easy, he can hire a tux, what the hell am I going to wear? So off we went one day, and we said we have to find a dress, and we went to a couple of places, could find nothing. I was slitting my wrists because I literally hate shopping. So what to do? Rang a buddy of his that works in an AI company, because his wife is a manager in a store in Cork City, and got him to ring her so that when we arrived in, that she would have the personal shopper arranged, that we could just go into a sit or a changing room and the personal shopper would just bring dresses. So we were working away anyway, and she was bringing dresses and this dress and that dress, and Pete was going, nah, nah, nah. After the 50th dress, and her Pete pulls out the phone and goes, have you something like this? And she goes, oh, I don't know. Well, he goes, if you don't, can you ring Coast in Cork City and see if they have it? Of course, your one's blood drained from her face going, God, am I going to lose the sale of a dress here now? But off she went anyway, searching the storeroom, and hey presto, she came back with a dress very similar to what he'd picked out on the phone. And it was just perfect. And he was exceptionally happy because it was going to go with the famous shoes he had bought for Valentine's Day. So he presented me with these beautiful, I love these brand of shoes called a Regular Choice. They're a small bit out there and a bit funky and a bit mad like myself. But they were a limited edition Cinderella shoe.
Okay.
They were all gold glitter with a big gold bow at the back, and they had LED lights. So when you walked, they lit up.
Awesome.
So he, when he saw the dress in me, he goes, oh yeah, that's it, and the shoes will be perfect with it. And I'm looking at him going, how in name of God am I going to walk in those shoes? But I did. I managed to stay in them most of the night, and the whole look was amazing. He's very romantic.
That's awesome. Well, I always put a photo with each podcast interview, so maybe you can send me a picture of the two of you together on that night.
We have a picture of the light-up shoes, actually. The newspaper took a pair. She had to tap her foot until they could catch it with them lit up.
They were all over Twitter the next morning, the shoes.
Yeah. So how
if you want a dress written for Sarah, what you do is ring the AI man, just go into a shop with her, hit Google, put the squeeze on the personal shopper.
I'll tell her. All right, how did you feel when... on the night when they read your name out, how did you feel?
It took me about 2 minutes to get out of the chair. And
the two of us were just staring at each other going,
I was looking around the room saying, God, would your man ever get up and go?
Sure, it was total shock, like, and total disbelief, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Took a while to sink in now.
We genuinely weren't expecting it at all.
Yeah.
God, it's just, we've had a fun year.
What a year.
It's been great for the kids. I think they've met so many people, made so many friends. They've got so much confidence over the year. And we just did it as a family.
Yeah.
And I think the one thing we were kind of conscious of the morning after we were chatting together, and we said, you know, we could make this, let a lot of other people enjoy this Farmer of the Year and do a bit of good for others. And we decided that we wanted to hold a charity open day, and we raised 15,000 in August for two charities, and we've nearly raised 4 grand again the other day now for the Pink Hole for us. It's just nice to give a bit back, and I suppose we probably haven't realized how much we've done. We've had 4 film crews on the farm, people from Chile, Argentina, Colombia, Germany. Australia, Germany, all over Europe.
It's been a phenomenal year, and we've made some amazing friends. We've got to experience some amazing stuff, being involved in some projects that would never have been possible. We were involved in another really exciting project in the autumn. There'll be more to just keep your eyes peeled for that. That'll be out the middle of the year, May or June, hopefully. That was phenomenal. It's just really the friends we're after building up as well. The other side of it was, I suppose, the downside of it, the small bit, is the begudgery and the jealousy of people.
Yeah. Have you had much of that?
Bits of it,
but we just decided that the best thing you can do is just ignore these people. You have to surround yourself with people who want to be involved in your life, and and if people want to be jealous and begrudging you the whole time, the best thing to do is just cut them out.
Yeah.
And that's what we had to do going forward for our own sake and for the sake of our kids. And we just get on with life now as Team Hines.
Yeah. Okay, so you...
Couples an egg.
Couples.
Well, with everything you've had going on, I mean, you've had such a lot going on the last few years. You've been so busy, and you know, and as everyone knows, dairy farming is kind of 24/7 anyway. And you've got three young children. How do you find time for each other?
Oh, date night. Will you? What you knew you wanted to ask.
You have to have a work life balance.
Yeah,
and no matter what, we try and have a date at least once a month. Well, yeah, being realistic, it is once a month.
Yeah.
You have to, just to get out of the house, get out of the farm, go and either have a meal and a glass of wine and have a chat about other things going on.
Yeah.
You just have to discipline yourself to do it.
We go down to West Cork for a week.
Yeah.
We normally go for two separate weeks in the year just to try and get the kids away and get a break from things and go kayaking and stuff. Yeah. We only went for 1 week in June 2017 because the year was so mad after that. And I think even at that, it was kind of a short week because I'd been in Dublin on the Friday,
yeah,
doing a podcast. And it was straight back down the road, quick run around the farm to see what was happening, change the clothes, into the car, and then drive down to West Cork. Tired for 48 hours after we got there, but we had 2.5 days together
recently
away at the end of November, and I think that was, we just got away from the whole world,
yeah,
which was pretty amazing.
Yeah,
I think it was probably the best 2.5 days that we had together in years.
It was amazing.
One of the days was it would easily equal the day we got married, so it is, like, you have to make time for each other.
We fell in love all over again that day.
Oh, you too.
we'll have to come back and tell you the story on that later on in the year.
I know that you go to the cinema sometimes because Peter and I were texting back and forth yesterday, and he mentioned the time that you both went to see 50 Shades of Grey.
I love 50 Shades of Grey. It's a brilliant story.
Yeah, so I think we better give everyone the story, to be fair. Now we couldn't sell them short. We were going to see 50 Shades of Grey, and of course, I suppose in Cork it's mainly women that go to watch it for some reason. but I was the lone ranger in the queue, and I decided to ring a friend of mine, and the same friend, now we'd have a lot of banter between us. I rang him and I says, yeah, we're at the cinema. What are you going to see? And I says, yeah, 50 Shades of Grey. But I says, I'm only here for educational reasons. when you have 30 women surrounding you that all kind of stop chatting very quickly to see you, see your kids, it makes it an entertaining night for everybody. But, I found a 30th joint, to be fair. No, I'm glad.
He loves getting me roses as well. He's very romantic.
Yeah, he mentioned roses yesterday, and you see,
I get a dozen roses every month for the first 12 months when we started going out first.
Man, there's people listening to this, Pete, calling you all kinds of things now.
Oh yeah, it's research, you know. They probably had compassion for me 50 minutes ago. Now I'm a goner. But to be fair, now, Will, they were real roses that I got.
Have you told Paula that? Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could happen to anyone, Will.
They look so real. Yeah, people listening, Sarah and I, a few years back, I bought Sarah some roses. And I mean, I don't buy Sarah flowers very often to my shame. So I was one of those men who came home very pleased with myself because I bought wife some flowers. And she wasn't there, so I put them in a vase, made them all look nice. And she came in and she was really surprised. And I said, oh, go and smell them. They smell lovely. And she went over and smelled them. And she said, are these plastic? And I went, what? No. And they bloody were, weren't they? They were plastic. And I put them in water and everything, without realising, Christ, I've never heard the end of it. She's still gone.
Last November, for 2 days, it was 2.5 days, it was Paula's birthday at the time, and I wanted to get her red roses for her birthday so that she wouldn't think I'd forgotten. But the place we were, They're actually very cheap, and so I found a florist right in the heart of
where we were,
a huge city, and online, and I ordered 100 red roses because they were literally the same price as roses in Ireland.
But should have seen the size of the Mall Cave roses.
I put in the message online, Paula, I'm not doing this to impress you. I'm supporting it because you will never see 100 red roses ever again.
There you go. So, just we've briefly sort of touched on it, but the pink overalls. I need to ask you a bit more about that. How did it first come about? Because I mean, you've raised a lot of money for it, haven't you?
Yeah, that was another consequence of a date night. And three of our good friends, Grace Roach, Alma Jordan, and Ursula Kelly. And we were just chatting to him when we were out on a date night. We went to a Munster rugby match, went to a pub after for a couple of drinks. And we were chatting to them online. And Grace Roach has a company called Prebird.ie, which sells overalls for women.
Yeah.
Workwear for women. A new startup business up the west of Ireland. And she had given Paula had a pair of her overalls. And she was bringing out pink ones. And
I said, I can't wait to get my pink ones.
She was organising overalls for the girls as well. And, of course, there was a big discussion about four pairs of pink overalls coming to Cork. And
you felt left out.
I'm always being left out. Tell me about it. Yeah, what about me? And she said, oh, don't worry. She said, I'll send you on a pair too if you wear them. And I just messaged her back and I said, well, I said, I'll wear them with a heart and a half. But only if it's for charity.
Do it for charity.
And between the five of us, then we just came up with the notion that the only charity that we could pick, to be fair, was Embrace Farm, because they support families that have lost someone in a farm accident. And that was very fitting to do kind of a fun farm thing to support a farm charity that supports families that really, really need help. Create a bit of awareness for the charity, so we decided we'd pick Valentine's Day, as you would, middle calving season.
Yeah,
and the crutches.
Yeah,
that was the calendar is always fairly full here, and it's trying to fit in stuff too, and that things aren't flashing. And so we went ahead with it last week, and we had a lot of fun with it. And that, as you can see, there's a queen of the dairy and. I think you were quite happy the fact that I was able to share the love with Donald. And...
yeah, it really made me laugh. I thought it was great, and you raised a lot of money, didn't you? It's a brilliant thing to do.
I think we're hoping we'll hit 4,000 euros. It's a very small charity, but people have been great to donate. To be fair, and we were gobsmacked. We're after getting a lot of donations from the UK, which it just shows like how small the farming community is in a way. And I think, it's very fitting. And I was just thinking about it today, that there's a big, big conversation about Brexit and how it's going to affect Irish farming and UK farming, Scottish farming and everything. And I kind of think, for God's sake, could they all knock their heads together about the farming issue?
Yeah.
Because whether we like it or not, We deal with the world market.
Yeah.
We don't deal with the Irish market, and the UK certainly don't deal with just the UK market. We're all dealing into a global market. And I think farmers realise that they're in a global community, and if the politicians could realise that it's the same. And at the end of the day, everybody wants quality, top-class food, which they're getting already. And I think the politicians just need to make sure that can continue, and farmers can survive what shouldn't really be a crisis if they organise it well.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Okay, so I'm going to end it, as I always do, with a quick quiz. I've got some questions for both of you. So if you're ready, I'll fire away. So question for both of you. What's your all-time favourite songs?
Oh, Ed Sheeran's Perfect.
Okay, good choice.
The lyrics are like written for our story.
Okay, so is that both of your choice?
Yeah, that actually does have a huge meaning to us. That song, well, it's a fairly new release.
Yeah.
Our memory of that song would be before that song was released into the charts. And definitely it was, yeah, I wouldn't forget that song ever in it.
Okay, all right. And Paula, out of the two of you, who's the best driver?
Oh, God. That's good. I suppose I'd have to give it to Pete because he can reverse the quad better than me when I have a trailer on if I'm not very good at reversing. I have okay. the car down to perfection in the Jeep, but put a trailer on it and it's a small bit trickier for me.
And Pete, if you, I don't know if you do ever argue, but if you do, who gets the last word?
So what's the next question, Will?
I'll tell you my answer. Sarah gets the last word every single time.
To be fair, now, when you live in a house with four women, you learn to say yes.
Okay, and Paula, can you describe Pete in three words?
He's my best friend, amazing, and affectionate.
Okay, and the same with you, Pete. Can you describe Paula in three words?
Oh, she's definitely my best friend.
Pain in the ass.
I'm not allowed to say pain in the ass. This is going live. Yeah, she's just one in a million. She's my soulmate.
Jeez, you two are so lovely. You're making me want to cry. Right.
She's got a great pair of legs. Start and finish as you mean to go on.
All right. Well, I could go on with these all night, but you guys, I know you'll have to get up early in the morning to milk. So last question, Anne. Is there any farmer or anyone in Ireland particularly, any farmer in Ireland that you'd recommend following on social media to a non-farmer? And if so, who is it and why?
Our answers were actually global to this one, to be fair,
okay.
If that's okay.
No, that's fine.
My one I have huge respect for, actually, is Leslie Ray Kelly.
Yeah.
In Canada.
Leslie's ace. Yeah.
I just think she is so inspiring.
Yeah.
And so down to earth and just so normal.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she's Leslie's great, isn't she?
Yeah, and Meredith Bernard, is it Bernard is her surname? Mm.
Yeah.
In a reputation in America. Like, yeah. She's just... I love all the positive vibes she just sends out.
Me too.
And yeah. I have to give a big shout out to Stephen Passon. I just love him. He's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
He's on my bucket list to get a visit over to him.
I'd agree with Paula with Leslie. I mean, like what Doomorag have done in Canada.
Yeah.
We should all stand up and applaud him because if that happened in every country, God, we'd change things fairly quickly.
Absolutely.
That is so inspiring, and I think the one person I would hugely recommend this side of the world to follow is Jude Capper. I think day to day she stands for everything that we need to achieve in agriculture, from sustainability and the environment, and trying to make farmers more efficient. So I think she commands great respect for that, but I think that above all, she holds her head so high, considering the amount of rubbish or abuse that gets thrown at her. She's so polite, I think she seems to have time for everyone, and
she does.
I would hugely recommend, if you're not following her, follow Bovi Divino or Leslie Ray.
Yeah, no, great answers. All right, well, guys, just... thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me tonight. I've loved it. And social media and Twitter in particular, it can be a brutal place at times, but following you guys on there and seeing you working together for your family's future and just how much you love each other, well, it's pretty wonderful. And congratulations for everything you've overcome and achieved together. And if you're ever over here in the UK where those girls are yours, please call in and see us because they can hang out with our four.
We look forward to it.
Thank you so much, Will. Really appreciate it.
All right. Take care, both. And to
pleasure.
Everyone at home. Everyone at home, thanks for listening. See you next time. I've been Will Evans. This has been Rock and Roll Farming. Thank you and good night.